Every black American is bilingual. We speak street vernacular and we speak job interview. There's a certain way I gotta speak to have access. If I'm sitting across the table from a studio exec, you know, sometimes they'll do it to me. Say, my man, what's happening? I'm saying, hold up, no. And I gotta throw out them big words. I gotta let them know that my parents are probably smarter than your parents, but they may not have had the access.
I want to welcome everyone to another installment of Bourbon and Brown Town. We are here again at Cards Against Humanity's studio. Shout out. I'm your host, David of Brown Town, with my boy Colin of Brown Town. Colin, man, dude, how you doing? What we drinking? Where we at?
So many questions at once. First of all.
I sound like you now.
First of all, I love how you talk like you're a mixtape DJ.
I'm feeling it, you know?
It's your boy, D-Money. I mean, man, who are you? Code switching already. No, I'm just fucking with you. Hello, everybody. We're feeling good. We're feeling a little liquored up. It's our second recording of the day, of the night, rather. Feeling good. Drinking some Larceny.
Mm.
It's very tasty. And I forgot your other questions. Now I know how it is to be on the receiving end. Speaking for 10 minutes and asking several questions to guests.
Yeah.
But we're feeling good.
Yeah,
we got our man's heavy crowns here. Heavy, what's Yo. Going on?
How we doing?
What's good, man? What's good, brothers? I'm feeling great. I cannot complain, man.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
It's so great that we have you back. So for everyone who doesn't know, you got to go back a couple episodes, episode 25.
Yes, sir.
Heavy Crowns was one of our guests when we participated with DePaul's Honors Program as part of his speaking series. So it's a Shy DNA related episode. Heavy was there. Shout out to Jessica, who was also there.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of things that we ended up kind of like trailing at the end. And that's kind of why we're bringing it back. And so today here we're going to be talking about a very simple thing, but you know, you have to talk about it. It's code switching. Colin, for anyone who doesn't know, who lives under a rock, what the fuck is code switching?
Oh man, throwing a curveball at me. Code switching is when an individual has to kind of switch up their language and sometimes their demeanor, even body language, to survive in certain spaces. Typically speaking, it's with marginalized folks or folks who aren't represented in the mainstream, having to, again, do those things to survive in a very real way, a very literal way, but also just get a job at a job interview.
Succeed, or
just kind of blend in. And that's kind of the way you talk, that syntax, that's the words you use, that's how you talk, that's your tone. It's a lot of things about it. And, you know, us being black and brown men in this room, we're kind of speak to our experience, but it goes for beyond that as well, right? But that's generally code switching and how you kind of have to do it and how it's conscious and unconscious.
Mm.
You kind of look up and think about what you're saying, how you're saying. You're like, man, that's me. And it's not, you know, it's always you. It's always authentic, but it's always like, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you'll leave a room and you won't kind of realize how you're doing it. Sometimes you will. Sometimes it's very intentional. I think everyone, when they go to the job interview, they make sure they're speaking quote-unquote proper, and we'll get into what that means, how it's problematic. But I think when you're black and brown and, you know, whatever, it's more of a, you come in there with a certain expectation on you, and you want to break that mold, and that sometimes works against you, at least has for me. But we'll get into all that.
I mean, it works against all of us, I guess, in some way, shape, or form. Heavy, I kind of want to start with you, as if people still don't know. Give us a little bit of your background and give us a little bit about you, about why Heavy Crowns. What is Heavy Crowns?
Well, Heavy Crowns here. I grew up in the Englewood community on the south side of Chicago, off 63rd Street, 63rd and Parnell to be exact. And I am an artist who is well-versed. Well-versed in the studies of African-American history and just community building and all things love, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I like to say I'm a bit of a street savant. So,
street savant.
You know, that's who I am, you know what I'm saying? And David and Colin think I'm kind of smart and can talk about a couple of things, so they bring me in to talk about stuff.
You're much too humble, Heavy. Much too humble.
No, man. I work in education with black young men, and their experiences are so very valuable to me because I'm able to learn from them and be able to be faced with a lot of real problems, real issues that a lot of people face every day that a lot of other people never think about, you know? And so it helps my music a thousand times over. Yeah. And it's a big influence on why I do music. Mm. So, yeah, the music and my work goes hand in hand.
And so as on a personal level, you know, you there's a distinction between, you know, being an educator and then being an MC. How have you sort of traversed the world of code switching or what are your experiences with them, you know?
How I'm able to do that code switch is basically because I don't really do much code switching. And why I'm able to do that is because working with the young men that I work with, I've learned that if I stay my most personal self, it relates to them much greater and deeper and for a longer lasting effect. What I mean by that is they see the times where I'm speaking, and then we're going to talk about this, right, properly and things like that. And I feel the need to show them how important it is to be able to do that. But most times when I'm talking to them, it's on a very comfortable, very lax dialect. And it's because I know that's what they mainly understand and feel and what resonates with them. So, yeah, man, I talk like we on the block a lot. If for lack of better terms.
Yeah.
Like we on the block.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm thinking back about the Shady and A episode 25. We were talking, you and I were talking mainly at the end about it. And you mentioned your fiance, how she always talks proper, appropriate. And I was like, I was getting turnt. I was like, what does that mean? What does appropriate mean? What is that, you know? And so I think we all know what like talking appropriately sounds like and how to enunciate all of your words. And
what words not to use.
What words not to use. Phoneme grave is probably not something you're going to say, at least in that vernacular, right? So I think we all know what, like, the proper, I think, and when I say we all know, I don't just mean us in this room, but I think everyone knows what, like, what, you know, quote unquote, proper and appropriate sounds like and what words you're using and what, like, the King's English. And I think, you know, we can get into class and race and all that, how it's, you know, not everyone talks like that. But as being black and brown folks in this room and the world and traverse the spaces that we traverse. And with your fiance, just she gets on you about not speaking that way all the time. Tell me about that. I think there's things I can tease out from there maybe, but tell me about that experience just so, interpersonally with like how that looks like with you guys talking.
So she like gets on me like anytime that I'm on the phone with somebody that's like a business call of any kind, right? And it's very subconscious. Like, as soon as I get on the phone, like, dude, my English is so broken when I'm most comfortable, and the way I talk is like so improper, hand quotes, most times when I'm talking. So when I get on the phone, I tend to overdo it, like, sometimes. And so I'll be like, hi, hello, how are you, yes, I'm doing good. Even before they even talk, like, hi, how are you, yes, I'm doing good. Yeah, so I have a parking ticket. So she's like, and so she'll be in the background, like, why do you have to talk like that? You don't have to talk. I hate when you get on the phone. I'm like, what? And she was like, that's, you're doing more than just talking proper. And it's like, I'm just trying to
get this parking ticket.
Yeah, I'm like, just trying to talk. Eradicate. Yeah, and I end up overdoing this sometimes. I'll admit, because I just understand that if I talk in my most comfortable dialect or tongue, native tongue, a lot will be lost in translation a lot of times. So I tend to end up overthinking, talking unnecessarily proper, and I hate to keep using that term. And then my fiance would be like, "Ah, no, you don't have to do all that. You don't have to do all that." I'm like, "It's easy for you. It's easy for you because
like, that's how she talks all the time."
Yeah, right? like I'm from 63rd in Parnell. She's from 63rd in Stonewall in Downers Grove.
So for those who don't know, what is that? What do those words mean? For those who aren't from Chicago, who know?
Right. So 63rd in Parnell is in a predominantly African American neighborhood, poverty stricken Inglewood. And 63rd in Stonewall is slightly diverse, but more so Caucasian suburb west of Chicago, and that's where she grew up. So she's all her life she's been around for the most part people that speak something closer to the King's English, as you said.
Sure.
And so for her, enunciating and, you know,
articulating sentences.
And articulating sentences, it comes way more natural to her than it does for me. And so what she says, that I'm like, okay, you got a point, but it's easy for you to say that, you know? And so we have those little
spaces. Yeah, that, I don't know my words are going to teach this out correctly, but I hear that, and I think of conversations I've had with folks, either with white friends or things I've almost said to my women friends about, like, how to, like, why don't you fight back, or why don't you do this to fight back against whatever anecdotal example exercised some kind of oppression being said against you. One of my best friends, a white dude, years ago, I was at the Trayvon, and he was like, "Yeah, like, you know, you should be able to, like, wear a hoodie in a white neighborhood and do what you want, woo-woo." And he self-checked himself. He's like, "You should be able to do that, and I want to say that." But also, he's like, "Oh, also, you need to survive." So it's like, to get home, you might have to, like, play the game to get home, and then, you know, you should be able to do
whatever you want,
but it's like, you play the game. And so this is, like, not the same as Trayvon, you and your fiance talking, but it's the same thing as for, she's always talked this way, right? And always, like, been in a rape
way. She just got on live.
Yay, so. What's good? She's on IG Live. Y'all should check it out all the time. But, you know, and I don't want to judge too much, but I feel like when I've heard, she's always had that environment. So for her, you know, it's easy, right? So it's like, oh, you, like, you know, be you, do you. But you're like, I hear you. However, like, I gotta get this parking ticket eradicated, so I have to play the game in order to survive. And for me, it's always like, where, and I mentioned this example earlier. It's like me being like a man. It's like, oh, like, you know, why? I haven't really thought this, but I know this is in the narrative as far as, like, maybe like, oh, like, fight back in sexual assault, or like, fight, be like, why don't you say something, whatever. And it's like, yeah, it's not that easy. I need to start for the next day, and, like, kind of call back to our episode with Zoe Goodman about fighting for gender equity. But with that, it's always kind of my mind, and it's been in my mind more so lately because, you know, I was raised middle class, and I've always talked somewhat like this, right?
I thought he was white when I first talked to him on the phone.
But my white voice, and he get a roommate. You know what I mean? But that's real.
But like, yeah, no, it's real.
A side note, I'm subleasing an apartment. So if y'all know anybody.
Give me the plug.
I'm subleasing a room in the medical district of Chicago. Okay. So if you know you trying to get somewhere, I got a spot. Like, yeah.
Tell me about that, David. You talk to me about what you just said.
Y'all first time
about
on the phone?
We'll be on the phone, right? Because like where I was at, I met Colin on Craigslist, and so I didn't meet him. Right, we emailed each other. He was the only person to email me back, like, literally that day. Like, I think it was like a couple hours later. And he had his phone number. He's like, oh, let's call up. Cool. So I skate to his spot, and I'm calling. I'm like, oh, hey, you know, I think I'm outside. Bye, bye. And just from the way that I'm hearing him talk, you know, like, just.
Yeah, it goes so swole as black dude.
And, and I'm like, hey, I'm looking for Colin. He's like, yeah, I am calling. I was like, sup, dude? So, I mean, like, you know, and that's another example, I guess. It's like, because, like, in me, like, I come from a background, it's like, you know, mainly Hispanics, right? And so, like, Spanglish is a thing, like, very, very easy. And so that's not anything I ever really had to think about until I started going with other spaces with other Hispanic or Latino people who didn't know Spanish. And so there's like, oh, shit, like, I got to change. I can't like continue my Spanglish with these people, even though like I think they.
Is Spanglish a blend of English and Spanish, mm-hmm. like in yeah, common yeah, yeah. talk?
Okay. And it's just like it's like at least from my own personal experience, like my first language is Spanish, right? And then due to my parents, you right. know, my parents are, you know came to this country not too long ago, and so because of that, and then like growing up with other, you know, first generations, like, you know, there's a lot of things that I remember, especially when I was younger, that like I knew how to say them in Spanish, but I didn't know how to say them in English, or I knew how to say them in English, but I didn't know how to say them in Spanish. And so you kind of just mix and
poor
match.
Thing. You poor bilingual thing. Oh.
No, at some points, like, and that's kind of where I like wanted to take it about like, you know, like schooling. Right. And so it's like for me, in comparison to a lot of the people who I grew up with, like, I don't really have an accent. Like people will be like, oh, I know you're from Chicago because of like the way you sound. And I'm like, I don't get it. Like I don't hear.
You don't hear it. Right?
I don't hear. But for example, a lot of people who I grew up with, like, you can tell they're not from here, right? And I've been more mindful over these last few years, how that's viewed, whether that's on my own personal lens or through someone else. You know, like me introducing a friend to somebody else and then them hearing them speak in a certain way. You know, sometimes there's that. Kind of like that pushback, or yeah. you know, they're surprised, or you know, what have you. But kind of coming back and finishing up with that is like, so like immediately I see Colin and he's like, oh yeah, no, that like I'm Colin, whatever. So in my head, I'm expecting to talk with a white dude, and now here's this black guy. So in my brain, I'm like, all right, bet. And so I kind of get to my more like what I'm more normally like, but I can't, you know, it's still like. It's still like finding out like how to properly communicate something with somebody. Yeah.
And beforehand, right? Coming, you like, you probably weren't thinking about this. You were like, you were gonna shift, you know, your demeanor or something.
Yeah,
language,
you know. Whatever. And you know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm telling you about how I think you were feeling up to this moment. So interrupt me, please. But probably subconsciously, you're like, all right, I'm gonna like.
I really need this spot. I'm getting kicked out. Like, you know, like he sounds like a good dude. He's on his shit. You know what I'm saying? So like in my brain, I'm already making Colin to be this person that he's not.
It's white dude.
Yeah.
You know.
That have blue eyes or brown eyes?
You have brown eyes.
That have blonde hair?
Yeah. No, but it's like it's a real thing. So it's like I kind of wanted to ask you a little bit, Colin. Like, so you mentioned, you know, middle class, and you said I've always kind of talked like this. Have you ever had like any specific experience or like what has been your sort of relationship with things like code switching? You feel?
Yeah, I mean, I think growing up. When I say growing up, I mean like, you know.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up 10 to 18 in Columbia, Missouri, small town, middle Missouri.
Oh, you grew up.
It's where the University of Missouri is.
All right.
So people think it's like, people from Chicago are like, oh, you're like boonies. Like, no, it's like, it's a college. It's not, no, Chicago. It's a college town. It's like 130,000 people. It's growing every day. So it's right between Kansas City and St. Louis. Really good town to grow up in, I think.
Blessed.
And I don't know the stats, like, you know, not a whole lot of black folks. But growing up, it's like I had black friends, white friends, people of all social classes, which is really interesting as well. And so I had a lot of different types of friends that interact with a lot of different types of people.
Columbia, Missouri.
And so in those experiences, getting friends and stuff, as I got older, especially, you know, folks talked very differently across the board. I interact with people who talked very differently in just a day, right? And so being fortunate to have parents who could raise me right and have, you know, means to, I don't have to struggle at all financially, especially growing up and everything, that lends a certain type of privilege. And I was very, very aware of that. I was aware of that when I was younger, I think, but I think as I got older, I was like, more aware as it went along. But also, like, I had friends who, you know, were on assistance as they needed to and didn't have, you know, friends in the home. And I had friends who were rich as fuck, too. So it's and we all traversed the same space, which was interesting. But
that's a valuable ass.
Yeah, so it's really kind of cool. And then as I got older and was, like, getting into more, like, black power movements and reading, like, Malcolm and, you know, getting into all this, my black radical shit, too, I was still with friends with everybody. And, like, it was interesting having a better analysis on all that stuff and also like seeing my like rich white friends talk about like Medicare like it was bad, but they were like the ones getting handouts from the parents, and it was weird.
Damn.
But damn, the original question, David. But I think in that, the part that sticks out to me the most, I mean, language was always a thing, and I was so like, oh, you talk white or whatever, like, oh, I didn't know you were friends with the other black folks because you talk a certain way, so they assume I'm a certain way. Which is like, you know, you deal with that as a kid, whatever. That was really interesting. But one of the things that was really interesting to me, and this speaks to my parents, is just awesomeness. But in seventh grade, I started like buying my own clothes, buying like Echo and like hip hop esque wear of the time, right?
Fat Farm.
Yeah, yeah. I had some Fat Farm. Some white ass Fat Farms. Oh, they all were lovely.
I mean, you had some. I had two pairs. I remember they were like,
keep them clean.
I cleaned them every best. Night. Did my best. That's when everyone was like, "Oh, I'm gonna step on your shoes." I'm like,
and your case pressure, your blood pressure would rise on your shoe. And like that speaks to it too. It's like I wasn't like there's been stories of people like being killed for like J's. You know what I mean? And I didn't grow up in that environment.
Yeah,
but I still would like fight somebody to step on my shoe. Anyway, finding the point. I remember a time where I came home from the mall with some friends, and I had like some tan brownish sweatpants that matched my Tim's, and I had like a shirt that matched with it. It was fucking clean. Well, I like showed my parents or something. They saw it, and at that point it was like mid seventh grade, and like all my teachers knew me. They knew I got good grades. They knew who I was as a student. They knew who my parents kind of were. They like knew, you know, I was about, you know, everything. Not all my friends were. Most of them were. Not all my friends were, but so I came home with this outfit, and I don't know what they said initially. My parents were very much like, hey, like, you know, yeah, we believe in you. We love you. Do what you want to do. But just know that, like, you wearing this in school, like, you're going to have to, like, remind, they didn't say these words exactly, but remind these white folks who teach you every day that you're still that same bright Colin from yesterday.
Oh, that's crazy.
Because now you're wearing clothes that are, like, quote, unquote, more black, more ghetto, whatever you want to call it. And they know the problematicization with the categorizing as that.
Yeah.
But it's true, right? And so it's like you're doing this, like, you know, they were going to be like, you do what you want, wear what you want, be you. However, just know, in order to survive, you need to remind these folks that you're still going to get straight A's, you're still going to be this person, and what you're wearing is going to be an indicator of your language and everything else. And I always think back to that when we had these kind of conversations like this. And it was super important. And again, telling of how awesome my parents they are, they'd say, "Don't wear this because you're going to be viewed this way." Like, no, do you? But just know you're going to have to fight a little bit harder every day in school. Just to remind them. So that always kind of sticks with me. We had these conversations, and kind of fast forwarding to the Chatty Nay event and like this conversation now is that I feel like again I've always kind of talked like this, and it's changing. There's slang mixed in, there's big words mixed in as I've got educated and having on folks, whatever. But I pretty much talk at a certain level pace. Like, I probably code switch less now than I ever have before. Mm. And I'll be in white spaces, I'll be in professional spaces, and I'll be like, bet, or toss the bag, or whatever. I'll say those things, right? And I won't explain it until they ask, because, like, they also need to know what that means, because my language is valid, and, you know, these are all just, like, words. You assign meaning to them. But it's a fact that the powers that be, people with privilege in general, assign what's appropriate, assign now, what's proper.
There you go.
It's funny that you said it, like, because I feel like, yeah, you know, okay, so when I'm talking to my coworkers I have white coworkers. And
really?
I have some white coworkers, and they've given me the sense that they're really comfortable and cool, and you know, really down to earth.
So. I'm down.
Right. I mean, for lack of a better term,
Mr. Crowns. So
when we're talking, I might do that. You know, I might include something like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I might talk a lot more lax, but I still feel like it's a lot more arenas that I can't do that in. And and to hear you be able to say, like, you know, now I get to include this, like, I still don't feel like I'm in a position where if it's people that don't know me yet or in the first encounters and something like that, where I could be in the meeting like, bet, let's get the bag. Because I coming from me, like, How Spanish was your first language. And so you have to learn English or learn how to incorporate it properly. For me, it's like Ebonics was like my first language. So it's like now I'm working to learn how to, you know, not have that be my first innate response, of way of talking, you know. And so for me, it's like, I hear you, but I'm still feeling like I can't, you know.
And I give that, but for two things. One, like, your professional life is teaching in a school, and obviously it might be different than a traditional model. It's still teaching in a school.
Yeah.
My professional life is teaching in fitness classes and like running Soapbox. I started, so I can like very much kind of like
do whatever the fuck we want.
Yeah. Essentially, right? And that's why we're broke. No. yes and no. But yeah, so it's like that's one thing that I have that
privilege.
You have to kind of play the game, you know. Second thing is like your first language was Ebonics, his first language was Spanish. My first language was closer to the King's English than yours.
That's a fact.
I like learned slang on the way and was like unnatural to me, but like I very organically picked up words and syntax and things, and like through my extended family stuff as well, and my family, like my immediate family too, that's different from like whatever my first language was compared to y'all. So like, I approach it in that way that like I'll retreat back to however I normally talk, and I'll find myself talking differently around folks, not just like more quote unquote appropriate around like white folks or in a professional environment, but also folks like low income black folks that I like to talk to on a regular basis, and it's not conscious, but I'll find myself talking differently. It's still me, but I'll play up a certain part of it, and I'll be like, why am I fucking doing that?
Yeah. Right?
And again, it's always still you, but it's just a little different. So it's just. It's fascinating how and why and when we do that. But I do think, like I said, part of, you know, if we're on a spectrum, if we're on like a graph, so to speak, and zero is like true you. When I was younger, it was, you know, I move my hand up and down, like
fluctuating
a lot more. And so now it's fluctuating a lot less. And part of that's just because I think growing older, just being an adult, you have more confidence to be you. But also I think, through the people I've met and the experience I've had the past, really just even 2 years especially, it's like I so much more see the validity in folks of all spaces knowing everyone else's experience and being able to validate those experiences in ways that they get to a point of equity and healing just in language, in everyday experience, that I think is important.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get too far away from the point, but this is from, I forgot what episode it was, with about Black history and resistance in Chicago with Kofi Adamola.
Episode 13.
Hey, look at him. He's a B&B historian over here.
Well, I mean.
He's like, no, I run the podcast. Kofi Adamola said this. Kofi Adamola is an activist, organizer of Black Lives Matter Chicago. He's amazing. But we're talking about Fred Hampton. Rest in power, Fred Hampton. This couple
weeks ago was
his anniversary of his death by CPD and FBI. But Kofi said,
it boils down to that communication. Anytime I'm working with young people, you know, I value their language. I'm like, don't change how you're talking. I want you to understand these new words if I'm bringing in a lexicon of social justice vocabulary.
Yeah.
But at the same time, though, I want you to speak how you speak. I don't want you to change, you know, because then, you know, I mean, that's what Fred Hampton was so good at. You know what I mean? Like Fred Hampton was a orator, you know, he's an excellent communicator because he can speak to you in the streets. Same thing with Jeff Ford and all of them. They can speak to you in the streets, but they can speak to you in other ways too. And we got to teach our young people to value their culture, their language, and just really unpack the issues. And that's what I love with what you all are doing with Shy DNA, because it's bridging that gap that I think needs to happen. We need to have these cross conversations on how does the streets impact the music and how the music impacts the street and what's the responsibility around that and what can we do to get through to people, you know, without putting this value judgment on.
And that was amazing, that last part he said, as far as like when you're in a certain space where there's a, you know, abnormal way of talking in that space, no matter what it is, and someone speaks differently in that space, I think everyone kind of has a value judgment on it, whether that's you bring them up or you bring them down in some capacity. And so how do you wrestle with that, depending on what that example is?
Yeah. So I really like that point because one thing that I do a lot and I put in my music is I'm trying to find this because I literally just was like writing it over here. So one thing that I've seen that's important in my music is I like to
Be like the pie.
Speak profoundly about how I am able to code switch. And I don't say it directly like that, but, and I'm mad you just poured me some more because this is really strong. I had just put in a rap on the way over here. I was writing on the way over here. And I was basically saying, like, who am I to you? That's a black on black, but that means lesser now. And that's a bigger fact. Politic with dope dealers and the diplomats. And so it's like,
exclusive,
being able, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, like,
bars.
Yeah, like being able to politic with the dope dealers and the diplomats. Like, for me, it's like, music is really important. And being able to stay true to yourself, to know that that's a way that you get through to your people. You know what I'm saying? It's like so important in rap. And I like to really bring that up in discussion to say, like, I can talk to the pimp and my pastor. I can talk to the dope dealer and the diplomat. I can talk to, you know what I'm saying, the president, or, you know what I'm saying, the penny pincher on the block. And I feel like that's important to be able to connect to, you know? So, yeah. I do it in my music as well.
And see, that's a privilege that you got that we don't. You feel so it's like you find that space, but I mean, like,
is that privilege, or is it, I mean, that's like is his chosen career and path that he's like doing. He wasn't born with it. You know what I mean?
You know, you're right. You're right. I misspoke. My apologies.
I'm asking you. The bourbon be sipping a little.
You
sipped the bourbon.
The bourbon is seeping into me. It's okay. See, we all here. No, but I mean, while we still, you know, depending on where we're at or how we're doing our shit, it's like we have to understand, though, that there's a reason why, like, code switching is a thing, though. Like, you know, we have the opportunity to, you know, here at Soapbox, like, really be able to be ourselves. And something that I really, like, have picked up on Colin over the last few years is, like, being unapologetic, you know, like, really be whatever it is you want to be. However, we have to understand that that's not always the case for everybody. You feel what I'm saying? That there's certain places out here that you can't, you know, like a good example is I've been doing fine dining for a minute, right? And I can't,
I don't know how you do it.
I've had problems, or people have had problems with the way in which I approach a guest or whatever. And, I've been accused of, saying things that I wouldn't have said to a guest. One, because like, you know, you're out here trying to have a wonderful night. Like, I'm not going to be disrespectful, right? That's not my, job. But like, you know, when, someone in my past was like, we hear you talk to your guests, you call them dogs. I'm like, what? Like, you're thinking that I'm coming out here and be like, oh, what's up, dog? Blah, 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 blah. It's like, first of all, clearly you ain't seeing me do my work, right? Mm-hmm. Clearly you ain't watching it. Now, whether or not sometimes I will, you know, feel a little bit more comfortable, someone be like, hey, fam, how's everybody doing? Blah, blah, blah. You know, like,
I'm not your family.
Yeah, you know, certain things. I actually had one dude, I was like, oh, my friend, I'm so sorry. He's like, I'm not your fucking friend. I'm like,
whoa.
I'm like,
Did you bone his ass?
I just like took it. I took the plate away. I'm like, all right, we gonna fix this real quick. Okay, my apologies. But then, you know, immediately in my brain, I have to be like, yo, you know, I'm so sorry, sir. That's not. Those were not my intentions. You know, I do apologize about the delay in the kitchen. Please just give me one more moment to make this better for us. Thank you.
Oh, man.
You feel what I'm saying? Oh, my God. Oh, man. Well, we had, well, I mean, but it's part of it. That's what I'm trying to get at. It's like, and I think there's a lot of these spaces, you know, where, you know, people aren't as blessed as we are. You know, you have the opportunity to be doing what you're doing in both your craft and in your professional level, where, you know, you have that. Colin and I have Soapbox where we're able to really, you know, use it as our outlet for X, Y, and Z. But then there's a lot of spaces where you can't. You know what I'm saying? I think a really good example was, you know, when we look at media and we look at, like, how people are pushing shit out, right? There's a reality to the fact that that's not always the case for everybody, you know? And as we know, you know, art speaks for art speaks for the environment, art speaks for the culture, right? And so we have a lot of content out, you know, SNL skits. One of the most recent films with our boy Lakeith Stanfield, Sorry to Bother You, which in order to be successful, he needs to quote unquote use his white voice. And something that I thought was really interesting about about that term, right? Because Danny Glover, also in that film, is, you know, sitting next to next to our boy Stanfield.
Oh, Danny Glover's in the movie.
Danny Glover. Yeah, yeah, well, it's funny.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, he's like literally chilling next to him or whatever. And he's like, see, this, you ain't doing it right. You gotta use your white voice. He's like, and he's like, well, what do you mean? Like, I sound like this, blah, blah. He's like, no. Like, you gotta sound like you got your bills paid. You gotta sound like you don't have a problem in the world. You gotta talk as if you've never been fired. But you get what I'm saying? Like, yeah. So that's also like a very interesting, you know, just to think about. It's like, you know, white voice isn't necessarily just like the rhetoric that you're using, but it's also like the manner in which you're using that rhetoric, right? And so it's like in the film also, like it's very fantastical. Is that the proper word I'm looking for? Because it's like yeah, he's talking, but this other actor, it's a white actor who like talks for him when he's using his white voice, right. Which I thought was fucking hilarious.
Yeah,
and it's not just him, and like there's other people in this area that in order for him to be successful, in order for him to make money and get out of the shithole that he's in, take care of his family, you know, get a better life from him and his partner. It's like he needs to do these things in order to succeed, and it's like that's a reality of the fact for a lot of people, which is kind of shitty, but you know, I don't know. We're in a very... Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think I... That moment... I mean, I have problems with that film. And I wanted to like it so much more than I did. However, that moment with them is great because one of the things that Lakeith says is like, oh, people say I already have like a white voice. People say I already talk like, you know, like white or proper, whatever that means. Which is like very true in the way he talks about it and how that's socialized. But... When you see him talk to potential clients on the phone before he develops his white voice, you can tell he's kind of unconfident. And he's kind of like, hey, Rush, like, can you hold on?
Sorry to bother you.
Yeah, yeah. He's very, like, kind of not with it. So with the white voice, like David said, and like what Danny Glover said in the film, he's very much like, hey, like, you're chilling. You don't need this money. You're just doing it for, you know? And I like what he said about, he's like, you haven't been fired. Maybe laid off. Which still has like benefits attached to it. You get a severance package. It's like, you know, it's like shitty because you lose a job in a sense, but it's not fired. It's laid off. And it's like, that's one thing that when you bring class into it too, it's like, and everyone of all races get fired, right? But it's like, if you're in the upper echelon or you're in some kind of like corporate job or something, you might get laid off and not necessarily fired. But if you're working really hard every day and Save a lot or something, I don't know, and you get fired and like you're, that's your job, that you're done. So it's like the class that they kind of bring into is interesting, and then it gets more to that when the movie continues. But that moment with them is super interesting about like, it's not just like how you talk and you know how you sound like this, but it's like the feeling and what your thoughts are and your confidence behind that, and the lack of trauma that you hear in the voice when you're talking is the more of like what the white voice looks like. Best moment in the film, everything else, that's their own podcast.
Well, I mean, one of the other parts that I did want to like, you know, just touch on is something that I thought was really interesting is so when, you know, we're hoping not to ruin it. If you guys have not seen it and feel uncomfortable with me giving you more detail, then stop this podcast, turn on the movie and then come back to it. But it's when his boss tells him to take off the white voice. So he's climbed the ranks. He's been killing it, slaying, making guap. He's been doing things he doesn't want to be doing, yada, yada. But he's still doing it because he's making money. So he's at a party. He's with his boss, chief dude, white dude, of course. And he's like, yo, no, take it off. Like, stop. Don't use that white voice. And so then he starts, you know, Stanfield starts talking. And then he's like, oh, I want you to rap. He's like, oh, I love listening to rap, but I can't rap. No, you can rap. You can rap. Rap for us. And he like makes him, puts him up like to try to rap. And the way he goes about it is he's like trying. He's clearly like burning. He's dying. He can't do it. Damn. But he just goes, he just starts like, nigger shit, nigger shit. And the crowd, which is predominantly all white people, is like responding to it. And then everyone gets super hype. Everyone's in it. And that's all he's saying the whole time. And everyone's fucking with it in his voice. And so that's something that I thought was also really interesting. But it's also like, so we're talking about code switching, right? And things like that. It's also, but there's like this sort of glorification. I don't know if that's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
It's also like, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think like, how Dan Glover describes it, the white voice originally, is that it's not you know, talking proper, appropriate, whatever. It's not that. It's the white voice that white people like wish they
sounded like. Talk or, how they wish they would sound like.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think it's this kind of similar thing with this commodification, othering, and kind of minstrelsy of like the Negro, right?
Yeah.
And looking at like, you know, you don't have to be like, you're black all the time. Like, I can't turn it on and off. I can't like right. push the melanin up and down. However, it's like for that instance, like perform the black they want to see. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I noted, I watched the episode earlier today, or the movie earlier today. I made some notes, and that was one of the notes too. As far as another scene that's really good is that, because the whole movie, and like contextually for how the movie's set up, it's granted that it's kind of heavy-handed, but I think it's heavy-handed in other ways that makes it problematic. Anyway, that scene is great though, because it's kind of a heavy-handed scene. He's like, hey, rap for us. Like, you is like,
it's your one boss, of the only, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's your boss telling you to perform, but your boss is white, you're in a white space, and he's telling you like to rap, perform this like coded like black thing, right?
Oh my goodness, that's what I would be like, right?
And I was like, don't do it. And he did, but it's like that happens, not that exactly,
of course,
but that happens, and basically all the time. Our first like trial podcast, we transcoded and put on Soapbox editorial.
editorial.soapboxpo.com.
Check it out.
Plug.
It's like episode 0.5.
Yeah,
Dave and I were talking about Tommy Lauren on Trevor Noah Daily Show. Point being. I bring up an example of years ago. I was out with some friends. They all were white. and so some I didn't know. And so we were talking. He was going to everyone in the group saying, like, hey, like, what's your dance move? Like, do your signature dance move, right? And he's going to everyone in the group. There was no malicious thought in his being. I believe that.
He was being a dick.
But he was asking everybody. He got to me. He's like, hey, do your like signature dance move? And I was like, yeah, I don't dance for white people on command. And I'm like, he laughed, whatever.
You said that,
yeah,
bro?
Yeah, and he laughed. For real, he's like, oh, for real. And he's like, no, but like, for real. I'm like, no, like, I'm dead ass. Like, I'm just not going to dance for you or whatever. And he's like, oh, I mean like that. I'm like, I know you didn't. It's not about you. I'm just not going to do that. And I feel weird you asking me. It's like, they might not feel weird because there's no collective history with you asking each other to dance for each other. But there's a collective history with you asking me as a black man to literally to dance for you. I know you don't mean that as far as like you're paying.
Yeah, but I'm
you
know still I mean? Not about but it's to not do about that, to. Bro. Yeah.
Later in that evening, we're out like some like bar club, whatever. I'm like dancing, I'm having a good time. And there's this other white dude, not in our group, different white dude. And he's like, hey, do the thing. He's motioning like a little like hip hop dance like thing, whatever. I know what he's doing. He's doing it right. He did exactly what I did. And I know what he's talking about. It's just, dude, I do not know. And I'm like, no, man. I'm not gonna literally dance for this person. I do not know. He's asking me particularly because he sees me.
He sees me
getting on the dance floor, to be honest. But I go to my friend, the guy I met. Let's call him Todd. I go to Todd and I'm like, hey, man, like, just, you know, like, this just happened to me. And, like, this is kind of what I'm talking about when I'm saying I'm not going to answer white people on command. And he's like, oh, I didn't know. Like, really? He did that? I'm like, to you, it's shocking. I know. I get it.
Oh, my God.
To me, it's like, oh, this is just kind of what happens. This is, like, part of just, like, being a black in America. Like, yeah. This is part of it, right? And I'm like, this is, like, kind of part of the conversation I was talking about when I mentioned that to you. Like, I knew you didn't mean anything by it. Like, and no, but, it, like, this is that happens all the time.
Yeah, I'm not dancing for you, bro.
I'm not dancing for you. I'll dance for myself, and you might happen to see it.
Right.
And yeah, pick up some, hopefully.
Well, I mean, how is it also, like, I mean, we've been out in spaces where, like,
destroying rugs.
It's like, start getting turned, and how many times is it that other people, they see us, and they, like, they'll join us, or they'll, like, they'll gravitate to our energy, or just because they see us as... You know, it's whatever they want
to
see.
Yo, it's something to be said about the underlining desire that when you see a predominantly... So, say there's black and white people in the same club or bar, and then there's a group of black people all dancing, and then you have that one white guy that comes along, and then he want to...
And he
feels like he's now validated.
He's emboldened.
Because he's been accepted into the black group of guys dancing over here, and instead of us like mean mugging them, we like, I ain't turn up. And they like, I'm having the time of my life.
Call it hype to everybody. Like, call it hype to everybody.
That's an amazing thing. Because I always feel weird about that. Because like, we'll be out, like you said, we'll be out turning up and have a good time, whatever. And like, again, let's call him Todd.
Yeah.
Todd's turning up with us. And like, most of me, honestly, as far as like, hey, it's like, it's for me just being like having an ego. It's like, oh, it's validation. Like, I'm doing something cool. Someone else wants to do something cool too. So like, I feel like, myself.
Fuck with it.
But like, I'm always in my head about everything. And so it's like, okay, like this white dude sees us turning up, and like we know where the beat drops. We like have rhythms. Like we're like doing it right, and he wants to be part of it. And it's like, cool. That's cool. But also like, he's trying to be part of this.
Thing that ain't his.
This black and brown space is like not his, and like we don't know him too. It's like, first of all, I don't know you, so
yeah.
What's the best feeling in the world is when you're black and brown in a mixed space and or predominantly white space, and there's other black and brown folks there too. Y'all give each other, you give each other the same look of like, well, what are we doing? How are we gonna do this? And everyone starts turning up together, and y'all bring together.
Yeah,
that just feels magnificent.
So my fiance. My fiance, one of her coworkers, last summer or the summer before last, they were at a wedding. They invited us to their wedding in like Michigan somewhere, right?
Oof.
And me and her were the only black people there, bro. Like it was all white people and just me and my fiance, right? And so she's like super comfortable because, again, I'm not gonna do it like that. She was more comfortable than me because of her background, right?
Sure.
And so I'm here like, oh, damn, so much of white people everywhere. You know what I'm saying? But then, just like, I hate to say this because I don't want to say just like typical black person. We got some drinks and us at the reception and everything like that. And, you know, the DJ, like, some white dude, like he really started like playing some nice joints or whatever, you know what I'm saying? And so like, a part of me was like, a part of me was like, don't do it. But then another part of me was like, you know what? I'm not gonna let me overthinking that if I start dancing, it's gonna be a spectacle to hold me back from enjoying myself. So when the beat drop, whatever, you know, I'm dancing, everything I know, you know, I'm doing my thing and everything. And then what do I know? All the white people start getting turned. They just like, yeah, he's dancing. He's dancing. Look at him go. He's dancing. Everything like that.
You were like more observing.
No, they started joining me. Like at first they was observing, but then before I knew it, like it was like this weird thing of like a circle, and like all the white people was in the circle. We was all in the circle, and like we was getting in the circle and then dancing and then hopping out the circle. Like, so it ended up being like cool, but. At first, I was hella like thinking about it. Like, I don't want to be the black guy going crazy. He hitting all the moves, and they just like, dang, look at him. I knew he could dance.
Right.
Like, you know what I
knew
what
it.
Man?
I fucking knew it.
It's like, I know you could rap.
There's,
you know?
There's
it's
a the book. Same. Exactly. It's the same kind of concept. There's a book called How to Rent a Negro. How to Rent a Negro.
Okay. I've heard
Talk about these experiences, and it's like, you can still do it. So invoice some folks. Like, get paid for this shit. it's funny. It's good. It's like, it's all right. But that's one thing. The second you, I want to tease out. I had made a note of it earlier. Is like when I was younger, I had this thought more so than now. When I kind of became like politicized, whatever you want to call it, and like knowing of the stereotypes I often thought were attributed to like black men. Is like, oh, I know if I do this, I'll be seen a certain way by like white America, or by like, you know, folks around me, and I want to like subvert that in any way I can. It's very much like always like, how do I subvert the stereotype? How do I like, you know, get good grades and achieve and subvert, like, so you think I'm going to be bad. How do I subvert all these, like, negative things, you know what I mean? Or things that are neutral, like dancing good or, like, having fun or, like, being loud in a public space. So that was the thing I was really thinking about a lot. And that changed over a longer time than I care to admit. But it was very much now more towards the second part of what, like, the two U's you mentioned that situation. It got more to the second part. It's like, no, like, the onus isn't on me to not play up a stereotype. The onus is on you to not think that in the first place. Right? And so it's like, if I have your song I like and I want to dance to it, like, I don't want to be in my head about, like, oh, if I dance, like, they think I'm going to dance like this rap song. that, you know, it's problematic, and so they'll think certain way about all black people, and I don't want to appease that. Like, no, fuck that. Like, you're wrong for thinking that in the first place. So me being all this mental energy thinking about that, how to like subvert what you're thinking, like, just that's just too much. That's not my problem. And second, and I think it's not like black and white, but yeah, I've gotten more towards it. Like, no, like, fuck that. That's your problem. We can have a conversation about that, how we need to help you. But the onus is not on the oppressed to help you get to a better place.
Yeah. And it's like, there's really not a thin line. It's a thin line with that because, you know, you're constantly like, let me not be, I don't want to fall to the stereotype or be typical. But at the same time, mm-hmm. if I generally like these things or something, then I need to be comfortable with that and not feel like I have to change who I am. That's very interesting because I was reading about Dr. King's time in seminary school in Boston. And this is before he's the leader we know him as. And so he's at a predominantly white college. And it just goes to speak about like how he went out of his way to make sure that he did not adhere to any stereotypes of black people, mm-hmm. almost to an extremely uncomfortable degree, to like, you know, he made sure he was extremely early to everything. No, seriously though, he would not eat chicken. Like, he would not do, like, he wouldn't do anything, like, things that, like, even if he liked them, even if he knew that he, you know what I'm saying? Like, he went out of his way to not do anything. And it was like, yo, you should never have to, it shouldn't be like that. You know what I'm saying? At some point, like, people just shouldn't be racist or shouldn't expect certain things from you. And, you know, so, yeah, like, it's crazy.
And that's real. And that's like I said, like what I said was kind of like black and white, but just there's certain times and places and situations, like for him, it's like where like you very much got to play that game to get this education that's going to give you the resources and power and skills to do the thing that he did. And, you know, that's obviously a different time than it is now.
Definitely.
Unapologetically black is in the mainstream. How I feel about that, they know that as a thing. And like it's, We're in a different moment now than we were then. And respectability politics were a much bigger thing with that movement, movements of yesteryear, than they are today. And again, that's a different podcast too. But I think that speaks a little bit too, like intergenerationally, as far as how he, and not just him, but just the movements of that day, less the Black Power movement, the Civil Rights movement, but more so had to, you know, wear suits and stuff and go in these spaces and exercise their rhetoric and their analysis to get certain things changed and had to be respectable. And that was something that was very important. And I think part of that was because of the movements of those days as well were very much tied to the Black Church, which was a radical organization.
Yeah.
Slew of organizations then than they are now, unfortunately. But that was an important thing. Whereas now, respectability is, we like know that to be like icky and kind of shitty and like kind of harmful in ways that are very real to Black and brown bodies. And you recognize that and we kind of are subverting that in a way that's unapologetic and still has the same analysis and same organizing practices than they did of yesteryear and learning from yesteryear, of course. But it looks different. It feels different. And I think it's for the better in most instances. So that's something interesting I think about as far as generationally how movements look. Because we're always fighting the same shit. Like, the prison nation was a problem then. It is now, too. Right? But it's in a different way. Like, we're saying fuck 12, and that's not just saying, like, oh, I'm like, please, because this happened, and whatever. It's like, oh, it's like tied to, like, years of what we know of, years of history of, like, CBD and years of history of
systemic oppression.
All these things. Like, it's not just, like, saying it because we're angry. It's like, no, it's like we're angry because of.
Or we're saying because it's cool. That's also, like, another
saying
like,
it's cool. We're that's going to that. Way saying, yeah, saying because it's cool. We're saying because it's, like, it's sexy. Like, no, it's like, this is part of a harmful institution. Mm-hmm. It's built to be harmful for black folks.
And it's crazy because, like, it's like I've been in places where, you know, going back to spaces that aren't necessarily my own, you know, where they're like, oh yeah, I saw you put this post up. It's like, fuck, also you just hate all cops. It's like, well, no, like we need to talk to you. But like, it's so, to me, sometimes it's upsetting, you know, it's like that. I got to sit down with a grown ass man and explain to him. It's like what I mean by saying fuck 12, you know what I'm saying? It's like, It's like, or have to defend myself and being like, oh, you just hate cops. It's like, no, motherfucker, I don't hate cops. Yeah. Cops as individuals aren't the problem. We're looking at it as a system. That's where we're saying fuck 12. But it's like, it's that. It's like, oh, you're just doing it because it's cool or blah, 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 blah. Code switching. 2018.
I think there's a lot of that too. Folks doing saying the same things or posting like activist level things that are like because it's cool. So it's like there's a lot of that as well. But it's like, how do you take that and shape that and have these nuanced conversations? But my thing with always with the nuanced conversations is like, I want you to understand, but also like,
I don't give a fuck.
No, it's like because I think the masses understanding matters, and the masses understanding policy that gets put in place, things that happen. They're gonna remember 10 years from now are gonna shift the conversation and shift like what can actually happen to alleviate harm, not but it's like, again, still it's like I gotta go to work tomorrow, I gotta go to sleep. I can't like have this conversation will take at least an hour to have, you know, talk, you know,
yeah, and you're not gonna be convinced, and at least if you're gonna listen too, gonna,
yeah, and like I'm really gonna listen to you as well, so like this takes time and energy and effort, and it all does, so where does that come into play? But it can start with like this. Saying toss the bag and not saying anything after that. I'm like, what does that mean? Oh, it means like to obtain financial gain. You know, like that's okay. I don't know. I just
no facts. Yeah. That is a great way to start. And like moving forward, as we're moving into the future of things and black culture and is being more widely accepted, you got to start somewhere. And I think that is a good way to start, to just, you know, put those little sprinkles of black dialect within common conversation, you know, and put the onus on them to inquire more.
Yes.
You know, we turn that into a platform. I agree.
And that's the beauty of art.
Yeah, so
that's how you do it. You do it in multiple ways, and music is music. As we all know here in this room, is one of the leaders in that, right? And from what you called as Ebonics, I was remembering. It's like, so growing that's up, like 80s. That's I actually remember watching. I remember like I've been trying to find it on the internet for a minute now, but it was like decoding Ebonics, and like it was supposed to be like one of those funny videos, and it was like. It's like, bitch, come inside my car. It's like, let's make these towers rotate. And then this like, white person comes through. It's like, oh, I'm very attracted to you. Can I please give you a ride to wherever you're going? Or like, so it's like, that was what the video I was trying to think about. And like, I don't know. It's like, it's clearly that video was made probably like 15 years ago at this point. But it's like where
probably exactly right.
Yeah. It's like where we are now and where are we choosing to take it? You feel what I'm saying? Because I also at this point it's like even in what we would consider professional settings, it's like having you know, to a certain degree is having the balls to be like, yo, I'm not gonna conform to what you feel as, you know, proper English. We kept using that word. It's like because of X, Y, and Z, like me talking the way I'm talking doesn't make my English or my words mean any more or any less.
And you know what? I think that as my career goes further along in music, that's something that I always need to really be cognizant of and be intentional about speaking on and bringing on, because I see myself in the future as doing college tours and performing, but the day before the show, I'm holding lectures and, you know, at these schools and talking about things that need to be talked about more than just having a good time and turning up on a stage. But, right. You know, going into these lecture halls and talking about, you know what, we need to be more unapologetic with our language, because, you know, I think that the ultimate manifestation of being proud of our special dialect can be seen in the fact that bling bling is now in the dictionary. You know what I'm saying? Like,
every time I come out, I say
bling. You remember bling. They were saying that? Like when Birdman and them were. Can we get a fact check? Let me not speak too confidently. But no, I remember like in the early 2000s, because bling bling was becoming such a prominent term, they were like, bling bling is in the dictionary now and things like that.
Like Webster's Dictionary?
Let's see. I could be wrong, but I want to be confident in that.
Yeah, no, that's the thing I'm thinking about. It's like, it's in the dictionary now. And like before it got to the dictionary, folks were like, it came to the mainstream, right?
Yeah.
Like I remember seeing a MTV like cartoon like ad thing one time where it had like some rapper being like Big Leg on stage and like kept going. It was like it's like a telephone that game.
Yeah.
And it was going to all this situation, people saying bling bling. And you know, you can imagine what happened between the last frame. Our little mini cartoon was this, like, old white woman being like bling bling, and she has like jewels from her like her husband. So it was like bling bling, like dead, right? But like dead, but also like accepted by the mainstream.
Yeah.
Accepted by this white people.
Uh-huh.
And that it's okay now because now we're okay with it.
Yeah.
And now we gotta use something else. How do I say we broadly, I say we being like any marginalized person, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like do a thing or say a thing, especially when it gets in pop culture sphere, and then how it's challenging something or it's seen as like dirty or wrong or bad. Think about rock and roll in like the 60s. Think about like obviously rap in the 80s and stuff. But it's like being like, oh, like it's now it's global. Now it's mainstream. Now it's fun. Now we're having Pitbull. Like he's talking about his favorite rapper, right? And it's like, and like that's fine. But it's like, oh, it's okay now because we're cool with it. It's like, no, it was okay then. And you just need to learn. That's something I always think about too, as far as like when things are okay to be celebrated. It's like when they are okay to be celebrated, then like let's look at that a little deeper. Let's think about why and see how we can subvert that a little further or challenge that a little further, because it's not okay that just now that's in the mainstream, it's okay to be celebrated now.
And like, but like all these things that we're doing, they're always conversations that, you know, we could be sitting here talking about this shit for hours. No, but I want to give a shout out to my boy Heavy for hanging out with us, man. Heavy, what can we expect from you for 2019?
You can expect a lot of new experiences, a lot of new places being touched down in. One for sure will be Columbia, Missouri, with Camp True or False, which will be an amazing, amazing film festival that I'll be able to be a part of with some young brothers from my school. Mm. And I think it'll be an enriching experience for me and those young men to be able to be in a place where we're watching all these enlightening, super enlightening documentaries and interviewing different artists and directors and things like that. So that's coming in 2019. I want to speak into existence a whole lot more trips in 2019, music trips. A lot of networks will be coming into fruition in 2019. A lot of things spoken in 2018 will be manifested in 2019.
Hey, we're gonna use that.
Videos coming, more shows coming. Man. I'm going into 2019 great. I have a show on the 15th this weekend, then another show with my Trap Out Chicago family on the 21st. So, yeah, man. 2019 is going to look like a lot of work and productivity.
Well, we appreciate you coming out here, hanging out with us.
I thank you all for having me.
Oh, man. Bless. And so without further ado, as always, stay black, stay brown, stay queer.
Stay tuned, stay turnt.
See y'all next time.
Oh, yeah. I came up where it's dangerous with gang bangers. Police got us sending out the sales. They exchange us. Courage, she exchange us. Used to cut that one dizzy. Use that on the red.